1 Samuel 21 here this morning. 1 Samuel 21. I remind you that where we saw Wednesday night that David is now running from Saul. As I emphasized, he's vulnerable as he's running in fear. So we have to be careful of that in our lives spiritually because we can make some bad decisions. But I want for us to take notice in particular today of the slaughter of the priests. It's a very interesting study. And so you think about an entire community, city of priests being destroyed and slaughtered. Why would God allow something like that? As people casually read the Bible, as they're not necessarily strong in their faith and what God is doing, I believe there's times when people question God when in reality he knows what he's doing. And I'm going to show you that here today. David is running from Saul. Notice it says in verse 1, then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said unto him, why art thou alone and no man with thee? He knows that he is a leader of 1,000 men under Saul's leadership. As far as Nob is 12 miles from Gibeah. And it's very likely that Saul brought the tabernacle to Nob. And I didn't realize this until I was doing some reading on this. But in reality, Joshua did this. Various kings did this. They would bring the tabernacle to where their leadership was in many cases. And so there's no permanent dwelling place for the tabernacle at this point. Notice verse 2. Then it says, David said unto Ahimelech the priest, the king. And I want to point out here that it's easier for him to tell a lie. You read the book of Psalms, David hated lies, and yet he's going to tell three lies in this short passage right here. Notice, the king hath commanded me a business, all right, so that's a lie, and hath said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and notice, I have appointed my servants to such and such a place. I want to go back to chapter 20 here. Notice verse 42. I want to show you that at least at that point, something would have had to change for that to be a truth. It says here, verse 42 of chapter 20, and Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. Notice, he, not they. David arose and departed by himself. He did not depart with any of his men. And again, he's a leader over 1,000 soldiers. And notice, Jonathan went into the city. So here, he says the end of verse 2 then of chapter 21. He says, I have appointed my servants to such and such a place. Now, if that's not a lie, then either Jonathan sent some of his soldiers to him, or some of his men went to him after he left. And it says here in verse 3, now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in mine hand, or what there is present. You know, he's hungry. He's running here now. And the priest answered David and said, there is no common bread under mine hand, but there is hallowed bread, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women. So what are we talking about here as far as hallowed bread? This would refer to the 12 loaves of the showbread. Remember on the table of the showbread in the tabernacle, they would put the loaves out and the warm loaves would replace those that were not eaten. And notice the qualification, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women. And David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days. And as I mentioned on Wednesday night, that's the 3 days he was in hiding since I came out, and the vessels, I believe the vessels here of the young men are holy, speaks of their bodies, as we see even 2 Corinthians 4:7 and other places in the New Testament. The vessels refer to their bodies being holy, and the bread is in a manner common, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. I want you to hold your place there. Notice with me Matthew chapter 12. I want to show you something here as far as what Jesus says about this situation. And that helps us to understand at some point after David left, his men did join up with him, or at least some men. Notice Matthew 12, verses 1 and following, as we see what Jesus said. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were anhungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. By the way, that's not against the law. That was something that was allowed according to the Old Testament law. So they're not breaking the law. What they're doing, what they're being accused of is breaking the Sabbath day laws of the Pharisees. Verse 2, it says, when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. That's the accusation. Not eating the grain, that was legal according to the Old Testament law. They're not stealing. Now, you were not supposed to harvest. You take a bundle of it with you. But as you're passing by, it was illegal according to the Old Testament law for the strangers or whatever to be able to take some of the grain. To take an apple off of somebody, your neighbor's apple tree while you're walking down the street. People don't think very highly of that because we're not under Old Testament law. But it says in verse 3, but he said unto them, have ye not read? All right, so now he's going to refer to 1 Samuel here. Have ye not read what David did when he was hungered, and they that were with him? Notice, they that were with him. Obviously, at some point here, David had some men join him because of what Jesus said. Of course, Jesus is all-knowing, so he would have known better, right? So it says, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests. So again, we see very clearly that Jesus indicates that there were men with him. So the end of verse 2 back in 1 Samuel 21, obviously, was not a lie that he had some servants with him. Now, I want you to notice again verse 5 of 1 Samuel 21. I want you to notice something that David says here. The end of verse 5, it says, the bread is in a manner common, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. The showbread was only to be eaten by the priests and the Levites. What does he mean by in a manner common? Notice it says here in verse 6, so the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the showbread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. So why he's saying this is in a manner common bread is because the showbread had been taken away, that was not eaten, was taken away from the table of showbread, and hot bread was put back in its place. So he's indicating, well, in a manner it's become common because this could be given to a poor person or whatever that came looking for food. David says, I'm a poor person right now, so I'm looking for food. So that's the whole context of this. Now, I want for us to pay attention here to verse 7. There's a very interesting statement that is going to be important for us to understand what happens here with the priests. It says in verse 7, now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day. Notice this statement right here. This is a very important statement. I've never really paid attention to this and studied it in its context. Detained before the Lord. Notice that statement. It's very important for us to catch that. Notice Doeg, who is not an Israelite, was detained before the Lord. His name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged unto Saul. So notice here, the Lord had him there for a reason. Very important for us to see that. But again, he's an Edomite. Why he's here at the tabernacle, the Bible does not indicate, except for the fact that the Lord detained him there. Verse 8, and David said unto Ahimelech, and is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? First of all, take notice there that priests were not considered pacifists in the Israelite culture. They were not necessarily unarmed. David thought maybe he would have a spear or sword that he could spare him. Now, I want you to notice here, this, again, another lie that he slips in here, probably to protect Ahimelech from not knowing the truth as far as Saul chasing him down or whatever. It says here, I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me because the king's business required haste. Now, I guess maybe indirectly we could say that the king's business required haste because he's running from the king right now. So again, he's kind of slipping in some possible lies or whatever here. It says in verse 9, and the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Notice that statement there. It's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Doeg is going to tell a lie based on this ephod right here and where the sword was hidden. If thou wilt take that, take it. For there is no other save that here. And David said, there is none like that, give it me. All right, so now he at least has a weapon. Now I want to point out again, David is very vulnerable, as I've been emphasizing. He's very vulnerable for running out of the will of God. And again, this is going to affect others, but we're going to see why. And I want for us to go into chapter 22. We're going to come back to a cave of Adullam and some of that here in another lesson. But I want you to notice something here in verses 6 through 8 of chapter 22. Notice here it says in verse 6, so this is the context leading up to the slaughter of the priests. It says in verse 6, when Saul heard that David was discovered, all right, so he was been out hunting, looking for him. Notice it says here, and of course we're going to see in the next lesson that he actually spent some time in Moab. It says, Saul heard that he was discovered, right, so they found where he was. And the men that were with him, notice now, Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. We see all of a sudden, as his mind becomes unhinged and he's suspicious of everyone. Everyone is possibly his enemy. Rosa says here he's constantly having a spear in his hand. He has constant fear of somebody taking him out. It says here, then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him. Saul has no reason to be suspicious of these servants. Hear now, ye Benjamites. Now, can I point out here that that's Saul's tribe? He's accusing of his own tribe of turning against him now. Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse, there's that term of derision. Notice he doesn't call him David by his name. He calls him a son of Jesse in derision and contempt. It says, shall the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds? What's he implying? He's not going to do that, but I will. So you better follow me. Notice David was from the tribe of Judah. So what's he doing here as far as the Benjamites? You don't trust somebody from the tribe of Judah to rule over you. He's going to give things to his tribe, not to any Benjamites. That all of you have conspired against me. He had no reason whatsoever for accusing his servants of conspiring against him. They're all standing around him, protecting him. It says, there is none that showeth... What was that? Let me play this little violin for you. There is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me. Notice he's asking for self-pity here. Or, notice, showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day. There's also no evidence whatsoever that David is lying in wait to kill him. None of this whatsoever. But here, notice we're introduced again to Doeg. This is why the verse 7 of chapter 21 is so important to take notice of this. Then Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, said, I saw the son of Jesse. Notice he's using Saul's terminology for him. I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. Notice that statement. Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. We're going to take a look at that here in a moment. And he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him victuals, provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Notice it says he inquired of the Lord for him. Where does it say in chapter 21 that he inquired of the Lord for David? He's probably referring to the ephod in verse 9 of chapter 21. Remember, he had the sword hidden behind the ephod. So as he moves the ephod, so Doeg was watching all of this evidently. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub. Notice that, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house. Take notice of that statement. We're coming back to these in a moment. The priests that were in Nob, and they came, all of them, to the king. Saul said, hear now, thou son of Ahitub. Thou son of Ahitub. And he answered, here I am, my lord. And Saul said unto him, why have ye conspired against me? I mean, this is the accusation Saul makes of everyone. Why have ye conspired against me? There is no evidence whatsoever that Ahimelech has conspired against him. Why have ye conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword? And here's the lie that Doeg told him, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day. Again, there's no evidence for that accusation. Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, and who is so faithful among all thy servants is David. Now, Saul doesn't like to hear that. Who is more faithful than David? Which is the king's son-in-law. Of course, Saul doesn't like that thought either. It's like, I had to finally give him my younger daughter. And goeth at thy bidding and is honorable in thine house. Notice, he's praising David. That's not setting well with King Saul here. Why is Ahimelech mentioning all these things? Ahimelech is in defense of himself here at this point, and he's basically saying to King Saul, why would I have doubted? Why would I have been suspicious of David? I mean, he's your most faithful servant. He's honorable in thine house. Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Notice, Ahimelech said, I did not do that. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father. Notice that, to all the house of my father. For thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. Of course, Saul would not listen to his defense. Verse 16, the king said, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou, and notice this in verse 16, the end of verse 16, and all thy father's house. Now, as far as Saul is concerned, he's acting from an arbitrary power as king. He does not have the authority to judge the priests of God like this, but we're going to see why I say that he was detained of the Lord. It says in verse 17, so the king said unto the footmen, the soldiers that were around him, that stood about him, again his servants mentioned in verse 6, notice he says to them, turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. Again, this is an accusation. He's accusing them of treason, and Ahimelech had no idea that there was any concern here. Notice their response, the servants. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. Here at this point, notice they're resisting this tyrannical demand of a tyrant. But I want you to consider here also for them, the fear of God is greater than a fear of King Saul. But I want to point out something else though here. While they're resisting King Saul, they do not resist Doeg. Notice verse 18. The king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. Now, Doeg's probably doing this for brownie points with the king. If I do this, then I'm going to move up the ranks, and maybe I'll have greater position and greater wealth and all those things. We actually even see that in the Psalms as far as his desire for wealth, his covetousness. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and notice, slew on that day 85 persons. How many is that? 85. Notice he fell on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. So 85 priests. I want to point out something else here, just in passing, though. Does it show in the scriptures at all that they were armed in any way, shape, or form? So literally, Saul is telling Doeg to deal with somebody who is unarmed, who cannot defend themselves. By the way, that's what our government wants to do. Take our weapons so that we're not able to defend ourselves. So we have to bow down and say, oh, I'll do whatever you want, king. I'll do whatever you want. It does not stop with the 85 priests, notice verse 19. And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and sucklings, infants, and oxen and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, notice, Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. And David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul. Notice he takes personal responsibility here. I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not. For he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life. But with me thou shalt be in safeguard. I want to go back to verse 19. So after the 85 priests are killed, notice in verse 19. Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword. both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses, and sheep with the edge of the sword. Why would God allow this slaughter? I want you to notice here, first of all, chapter 22 here, verse 11 and 12. I want to emphasize a statement again that I pointed out as we were going through here. Verse 11, it says, "Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob." Verse 12. "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." And answered, "Here I am, my lord." Notice verse 16 again. "The king said, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou," and notice, "all thy father's house." Verse 20. "And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David." Why is that significant? Let's go back to chapter 14 and verse 3. We're going to trace our way back here to understand why God allowed the slaughter. Now, I'm not saying that Doeg got off free of all this, but I want you to notice something here. Chapter 14, verse 3. "And Ahiah, the son of Ahitub," notice, another son of Ahitub here. Notice this statement right here. "Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of" whom? "Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod." Ah, we're starting to see his family's ties here. Family ties here now. His father's house. So it's going back to Eli. Chapter 4. Notice 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 19. We're going to trace this back so we understand why God allowed for the slaughter here in Nob. Notice it says here, verse 19 of chapter 4, "And his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women that stood by her said unto her, Fear not, for thou hast borne a son. But she answered not, neither did she regard it. And she named the child Ichabod." Chapter 14, verse 3, we saw that reference. "Ichabod, saying, The glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, because her father-in-law and her husband. And she said, The glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken." So again, we're tracing the family line back here, the lineage of Ahimelech and Abiathar. Notice then, chapter 3, verse 11. So this is the message that Samuel was given from the Lord to deliver to Eli. Chapter 3, verse 11. "And the Lord said to Samuel, Behold, I will do a thing in Israel at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle." All right, so both ears tingling, you know this is pretty serious, right? Wow. Okay. When you're itching, scratching both ears in amazement at the message, then this is a serious, serious prophecy from God. Announcement of judgment and doom. Verse 12. "In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth." All right, so he knew the iniquity of his sons, "because his sons made themselves vile and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering," notice, "forever." As I pointed out as we were going through this passage, Eli should have at least removed his sons from the priesthood. At least, that's minimum. Now, chapter 2, verse 27. So here's an unnamed man of God. I want you to notice the message that he delivers. You know, we live in a day when so-called prophets fly in $65 million jets and all that kind of stuff. You know, they live in million-dollar houses. It was not popular in Scripture to be a prophet of God. Here's an unnamed man of God. It says in verse 27, "There came a man of God unto Eli and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, Did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father. So this is Eli's father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house. All right, so he's in the Aaronic priesthood, the priesthood of Aaron. And did I choose him of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel? Notice the accusation from the Lord here. Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice? This is Eli here. Why are you kicking at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation? And notice the second accusation here. He was honoring his sons above God. By the way, that's idolatry. Honorest thy sons above me to make yourselves fat. We see later on that Eli was very fat. He was very heavy, the Bible says. Why? Because he was getting fat off of what his sons were doing with the sacrifices. With the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house. That's symbolic, not literally, but that's symbolic of strength. I'm going to cut off the strength of your household, that there shall not be an old man in thine house. That explains why the children were killed in chapter 22. And thou shalt see an enemy in my habitation, in all the wealth which God shall give Israel. And there shall not be an old man in thine house forever. Notice it's repeated for emphasis. And the man of thine whom I shall not cut off from mine altar shall be to consume thine eyes and to grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thine house shall die in the flower of their age. They're going to die young. There's a third emphasis as to why that happened in chapter 22. And this shall be a sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. Eli knew it was happening, the judgment was happening, when he received that report in chapter 4. Now raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and shall say, put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's offices, that I may eat a piece of bread. Now wait a minute. Wait a minute, preacher. Abiathar escaped. And he was even a priest in the days of David. I want you to notice with me 1 Kings chapter 2. Sometimes God's judgment moves slowly, but it moves surely. 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 26. All right, so this is Solomon, and he says unto Abiathar the priest, said the king, King Solomon, get thee to Anathoth, unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because thou hast been afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted. So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spake concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. Exodus chapter 20. Why all of the children? Exodus chapter 20, verse 4. Exodus 20, verse 4. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. Notice this. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. There's the reality of Eli. By his own actions, because he was offending the jealous God, exalting his sons above God himself. God took that as hatred. And he says, I'm going to visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. So did Doeg get away with it? Notice Psalm 52. This is a psalm that was penned by David in this context. In this historical context, Psalm 52. I want you to notice the introduction to this psalm, Psalm 52. To the chief musician, Maskil, a psalm of David, when Doeg the Edomite, clearly specific, why he's writing this psalm, came and told Saul and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. This is the historical context of this psalm. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? Notice this statement in the midst of all that happened in 1 Samuel 22. The goodness of God continueth continually. Wait a minute. An entire city of priests slaughtered, the edge of Doeg's sword. That's goodness of God? You see, we can't look at the circumstance. We've got to look at God's character, God's nature. God said, I told Eli this was going to happen. I told him. Now, here's what I want to point out, though, is that Doeg, as a wicked, wicked man, was still going to experience God's judgment. Can I remind you that the Psalms, I forgot to look up the reference here, the wicked, which is thy sword. And another example from history, Babylon was used by God to judge Judah. But God judged Babylon for their wickedness, literally slaughtering children and leaving them, literally. King Nebuchadnezzar was a vile, perverse, wicked man. Verse 2, thy tongue deviseth mischiefs, like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness, Selah. Wicked rulers. Here's this wicked man, Doeg. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. Again, I pointed out in 1 Samuel that he told a lie about the ephod and so on. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living, Selah. The righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches. I pointed out back in 1 Samuel that Doeg probably is doing that for prosperity, for position, and all those things, and strengthened himself in his wickedness. I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. This is David pointing out, I'm like a green olive tree in the house of God. When he was writing that, he was not in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it. And I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. The goodness of God, even in a time, situation, like circumstance, like Doeg. Notice Psalm 120. Psalm 120. Again, I just want to point out some psalms that are in this context of Doeg. Now, this does not specifically say this, but most, because of some similarities with Psalm 52 and so on, there are some who suggest that Psalm 120 was also penned at the time of Doeg the Edomite. In my distress, I cried unto the Lord, and he heard me. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue. You think about the example of Judas also, as he betrayed the Lord with a kiss. What shall be given unto thee, to the lying lips, the deceitful tongue? What shall be given unto thee, or what shall be done unto thee, thou false tongue? Sharp arrows of the mighty, with coals of juniper. So if this psalm is truly dealing with Doeg, the Edomite, notice he someday would experience the judgment of God. Woe is me that I sojourn in Mesech, and I dwell in the tents of Kedar. Kedar was a son of Ishmael, so we're talking about the Arabian Peninsula. Mesech was probably up in the area of Europe. So we see the two opposite extremes of direction here. My soul hath long dwelt with him that hateth peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. God of peace, the Prince of peace, the gospel of peace. And notice they're for war. One other psalm here as we close, Psalm 140. Psalm 140, another psalm that some suggest relates to Doeg. Again, another psalm of David, Psalm 140. Deliver me, O Lord, from the evil man. Preserve me from the violent man. Again, some suggest that's Doeg in particular, which imagine mischiefs in their heart. Continually are they gathered together for war. Remember, Saul has 3,000 men chasing after David, possibly in this historical context. They have sharpened their tongues like a serpent. Adder's poison is under their lips, Selah. Keep me, guard and protect me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from the violent man, singular, violent man, who have purposed to overthrow my goings. The proud have hid a snare for me and cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set gins for me, Selah. A gin is a contraction of engine. So we're talking about a machine or instrument. Well, wait a minute, I didn't know they had machines back then. Well, yeah, they had machines. They have set gins. Okay, so they may not have had motors, but they had machines to make it easier for man to, you know, cotton gin is an example. Separates seeds from cotton. So this gin is a machine of man's invention. I said unto the Lord, Thou art my God. Hear the voice of my supplications, O Lord. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation, Thou hast covered my head in the day of battle. Grant not, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Further not his wicked device, lest they exalt themselves, Selah. For the head of those that compass me about, let the mischief of their own lips cover them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into the fire, into deep pits, that they rise not up again. Let not an evil speaker be established in the earth. Evil shall hunt the violent man to overthrow him. I know, notice this assurance, I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted and the right of the poor. Surely the righteous shall give thanks unto thy name. The upright shall dwell in thy presence. So why did God allow the slaughter of an entire city of priests? Because God warned Eli decades before. Decades before. So when things happen in our world today, let's remember that God is sovereign. He's still on the throne. And God may be bringing out, I'm not saying always, but God may be bringing out some judgment because of something in the past, 3 and 4 generations before. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to understand and to keep in mind that you are a sovereign God. And Lord, you're also a righteous God, and you always do what is right. So when we take a look at the slaughter of an entire city of priests, we understand that you had a plan, you had a purpose, and you used Doeg, a wicked man, as your sword. Help us remember these things in Jesus' name. Amen.